If ever you have to run slaves, which seems unlikely nowadays, although you never can tell what may happen if we have the liberals back, the way to do it is by steamboat. The Sultana, bound for Cincinnati by way of Baton Rouge, Vicksburg, Memphis, and Cairo, beat the old Balliol College all to nothing. It was like cruising upriver in a fine hotel, with the niggers out of sight, mind, and smell. No pitching or rolling to disturb the stomach, and above all, no John Charity Spring. Crixus spent hours drilling me in the details of the journey, about cash and passage tickets and how the slaves would be fed, how I might answer casual inquiries and take part in river gossip without appearing too out of place. And by the end of it, I realized how little chance I would have stood as a fugitive on my own account. There were enough Englishmen on the river in those days to make an extra one nothing out of the ordinary. But since I was meant to be a new-fledged slave trader, it was important that I shouldn't make any slips. My story would be that I had recently forsaken African blackbirding in favour of river dealing. I had all the expert knowledge for that, at any rate. In mid-afternoon, with a broad-brimmed planter's hat, my long-tailed coat and half-boots, I joined my coffle in the cellars of Crixus's house. There were six of them, in light ankle irons, with Randolph in the middle, looking damned miffed, which cheered me considerably. The other five were free niggers in Crixus' employ and, like him, devoted to the Underground Railroad. There was much handshaking and God-blessing, and then it was a short step to the levee. I had my heart in my mouth as I strode along, trying to look like Simon Legree, with my gang of coons shuffling behind. I had protested to Crixus that if the Navy were on the lookout for me, the waterfront would be a deuced dangerous place, but he said not at the steamboat wharves, and he was right. There were coffles by the score, with fellows dressed like me shepherding and cursing, bawling to each other and chewing on big black cigars. Old ladies with hat boxes and parasols and men with carpet bags and stovepipe hats were hurrying for their boats. Niggers with carts were loading piles of luggage. The big twin smoked stacks were belching and the whistles squealing. It was like the Tower of Babel with the scaffolding about to give way. I pushed ahead until I found the Sultana, and within an hour we were thrashing upstream. My niggers were stowed down on the main deck at water level, where the baggage and steerage people go, and I was reclining in my stateroom up on the Texas deck, smoking a cigar and deciding that things had turned out not so badly after all. The purser had accepted my ticket in the name of James K. Prescott, without a blink, and bawled to one of his niggers to take the gentleman's coffle forward. And with the boat so crowded with passengers, I felt security returning and set out to enjoy the trip as far as possible. The Sultana was a big, fast boat. She had three decks from the Texas to the waterline, with the boiler deck in the middle. This was where the main saloon and staterooms were, all crystal chandeliers, gilding and plush with carved furniture, fine carpets, and oil painting. All very fine, in a vulgar way. And the passengers matched it.